Welcome to the Factual Forecast, a look at the week's biggest stories and what they mean from the editors at Factual. I'm Jimmy Lovis. Today is February 1st, and in this week's forecast, we've got Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger withdrawing from a West African economic bloc, the end of a ceasefire between the Colombian government and a guerrilla group, elections in Azerbaijan and Pakistan, and the U.S. Supreme Court discussing a challenge to Trump's presidential bid. You can also read about these stories and more in our weekly newsletter, which you'll find a link to in the show notes. Up first, we'll look at three West African countries withdrawing from the economic bloc known as ECOWAS. For more on that, we've got Factual Senior Editor, Sophie Perrier. Hello, Sophie.
Hey, Jimmy.
Well, Sophie, it's always great to have you on here talking about Africa, and today you've got news about ECOWAS. So, what's happening?
That's right, I do. So three West African nations under the control of military governments have decided to leave the bloc, whose full title is the Economic Community of West African States. Tensions have been running high for months after the organization imposed sanctions on Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger in the wake of their respective military coups. The move isn't entirely unexpected. Back in September, the three countries formed a rival alliance to ECOWAS called the Alliance of Sahel States, which some ECOWAS members saw as a precursor to their departure.
And what's the latest then?
Well, in a joint statement on Sunday, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger accused ECOWAS of applying inhumane sanctions in the wake of their military coups. They also claimed ECOWAS is subject to foreign influence and has abandoned the ideals of Pan-Africanism established at its inception about 50 years ago. Finally, the three countries say ECOWAS has failed to address major issues affecting member states, including the violent insurgency in the Sahel region. Now, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger are the states most highly affected by this insurgency in the area.
What have the responses to these ECOWAS withdrawals been like?
Well, ECOWAS says it hasn't yet received a formal notice from the three countries to leave the bloc. That notice kickstarts the departure process, which takes about a year. Nigeria, the country that chairs ECOWAS, has accused the military leaders of Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger of acting in bad faith and not giving their citizens a chance to choose their future. That latter comment refers to these three countries' failure to organize elections to return to civilian rule, which has been the source of quite a lot of the tensions over the past year. Togo, which is an ECOWAS member, sent a delegation to Niger's capital, Niamey, earlier this week, but it's not clear whether they were there representing the bloc or in an individual diplomatic capacity.
Well, considering all that, Sophie, what do you think folks should be watching for next then?
So, a few things. ECOWAS has indicated it's keen to negotiate with the three departing countries. And as I mentioned, the departure process takes quite a while. So it's likely we'll see a bit of back and forth while the details are worked out. However, I do think ultimately it's unlikely ECOWAS will be able to prevent Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger from leaving. The bloc's been losing influence in the region for quite a while after failing to prevent a spate of military coups. From a longer-term perspective, ECOWAS's future is unclear. The three departing countries represent more than half of the organization's geographical span and about 15% of its population, so it's quite a significant chunk. This is the first time any nation has left ECOWAS since its inception, and other countries could follow suit if they share the same concerns over so-called foreign Western influence and militant activity. Effectively, this development formalizes a proxy power struggle, which has been going on in the region for a few years, between the West, which has supported existing bodies like ECOWAS, and countries like Russia, who've sought to gain influence by supporting military governments and allegedly supplying mercenaries to fight insurgent forces. We've now got a situation where we have these two rival economic organizations representing the two sides of this diplomatic conflict, effectively. Alongside the practical sort of on the ground implications of this departure, like trade and immigration, it's also worth monitoring how each of those global powers will respond and whether they'll try to regain or exert any influence in the wake of this development.
Well, Sophie, we'll stop there for today. But as always, thank you so much for keeping us up to speed on what we need to know. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Take care. A ceasefire between the Colombian government and the leftist guerrilla group the National Liberation Army, or ELN, is due to expire on Monday, The original deal, which came into force this past August, was due to expire January 29th, but it was extended by a week to allow for more talks on a longer ceasefire set to last another 6 months. The talks are part of an ongoing effort by the Colombian government to demobilize the ELN, which has been behind numerous attacks on police and military targets since its founding in the 1960s. Both sides appear to be invested in continuing the negotiations, with the ELN agreeing to hold off on extortion-based kidnappings for the time being. Finally, while Colombia's security situation remains volatile, with other armed groups like former FARC dissidents and the Clan del Golfo cartel still staging attacks, if a lasting agreement with the ELN can be reached, that gives the government one less source of insecurity to be concerned with. Azerbaijan's authoritarian president, Ilham Aliyev, will seek to affirm his leadership in a snap presidential poll on Wednesday. Back in December, Aliyev called snap elections, bringing forward a presidential vote that was due to take place in 2025. The polls are being dubbed the victory election, after Azerbaijan claimed full control over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region after expelling Armenian forces. Peace negotiations over the region are ongoing. Now, there's speculation the vote was brought forward to capitalize on a spike in Aliyev's popularity and ensure a continuation of his family's decades-long rule of Azerbaijan. Aliyev himself has been president since 2003. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe is sending a team of observers to monitor the electoral process. They will issue a preliminary report after the poll. Previous elections have been marred by allegations of fraud and vote rigging. Pakistan will hold general elections on Thursday. They'll come against a backdrop of increased militant attacks and allegations of army involvement and vote rigging. Nawaz Sharif, the three-time prime minister and leader of his own faction of the Pakistan Muslim League, has emerged as a leading candidate after his return from self-exile in London. Sharif was not able to run in the 2018 polls as he was in prison for corruption, but he was cleared of all charges in time for this year's vote. His main opponent will be Bilawal Bhutto, chairman of the Pakistan People's Party. Former Prime Minister Imran Khan is not allowed to run due to numerous ongoing court cases against him. He's also currently in jail on corruption charges. Pakistan's powerful military has long played an outsized role in the country's politics, and there are concerns Khan's fallout with top generals means his Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party has not had a fair chance to campaign. Dozens of workers have been arrested, and the party's ballot logo has been banned. There will also be significant military presence on polling day after the government approved an army deployment, ostensibly because of the security situation. Pakistan is currently grappling with an uptick in militant activity in the western provinces of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Balochistan. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments Thursday on whether former President Donald Trump should be barred from seeking a return to office for violating the Insurrection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The Colorado Supreme Court removed Trump from the state's Republican primary ballot in December, citing his role in inciting the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows also ruled that Trump didn't meet the ballot qualifications in that state under the same rationale. That decision has been paused by a judge pending the U.S. Supreme Court ruling. In a brief challenging the Colorado decision, Trump's legal team warned that excluding him from the ballot would, quote, promise to unleash chaos and bedlam. Now, with a third of the court's justices picked by Trump and another third appointed during other Republican administrations, it seems unlikely that the conservative majority will rule against the former president. Some observers believe the court will look to make a narrow ruling, one that allows Trump to remain on the ballot without addressing the insurrection claims. One final note for you. Like many podcasts, we include a transcript each episode. What you may not know is that every transcript includes links to dozens of news articles and other sources. We pack an awful lot of news into these 10 minutes, and we want to make it as easy as possible for you to get additional information. As always, thank you for listening to the Factual Forecast. We publish our forward-looking podcast and newsletter each Thursday to help you get a jump start on the week ahead. Please subscribe and review wherever you find your podcasts. And we'd love it if you'd consider telling a friend about us. Today's episode was produced with work from Factual editors Jaime Kai Moreno, David Whiteley, Aves Ahmad, and Joe Vieira. Our interview featured editor Sophie Perrier, and our podcast is produced and edited by me, Jimmy Levis, with additional writing by Sophie Perrier. Our music comes courtesy of Andrew Gosby. Until next time, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or events we've missed, drop us a note by emailing hello@factl.com.